Hello, my name is Justin Wagner. I am a graduate student at the University of Maryland College Park. And today I'll be talking about preliminary research on privacy-preserving microbiome sequencing analysis and storage systems. So first, I'll talk about what microbiome sequencing is. So the goal of microbiome sequencing is to study and analyze microbial communities that can't easily be cultured in the lab. So the main unit of study is to use clusters of similar DNA sequences that are extracted from an environmental sample. And these are called operational taxonomic units. So you'll hear this OTU throughout the talk, and I just want to make sure that I get it off in the first slide. That is simply, we're collecting data, collecting a sample from the environment and then having similar sequence of DNA, and that's an operational taxonomic unit. So the pipeline for microbiome sequencing is to first collect a microbial community sample. So that'll be, for instance, from your from a body site on an individual, so your skin, your mouth, or your gut cavity. Second is to extract the DNA from that sample. So this will involve removing any organic or inorganic matter that isn't DNA. Third is to amplify and sequence the 16S rRNA gene. So this is a specific genetic marker that's going to be used in microbiome sequencing. So it's an important genetic marker because it codes for part of the ribosome. So the ribosome is a required cellular structure in all living cells. An important piece of the an important characteristic of the 16S rRNA gene is that any identical genome, so any bacteria of the same strain and species, will have the same copy of this genetic marker, and any bacteria that isn't of the same genome will have a different copy. So these 16S rRNA genes are sequenced, and then similar sequences are grouped into an operational taxonomic unit. And then finally, to identify what these operational taxonomic units represent, for example, species or just a genus sample, they're mapped against databases that contain sequences and annotations. For instance, you would get an OTU that represents E. coli, and then one of these three databases would contain the sequence for E. coli for the 16S rRNA gene, and then the actual name, E. coli, species strain. So microbiome sequencing is used in a number of ongoing projects. The first is the Human Microbiome Project. It's similar to the Human Genome Project. The goal of the project is to sequence and characterize healthy human microbiome and then release data sets and tools to enable analysis. The Personal Genome Project is an interesting project, and the goal with that is to release patient genome, microbiome, and health records to enable researchers to correlate genomic and microbiome variants and health outcomes. Third is the American Gut Project, which is characterizing human microbiome. And another one is the Global Enterics Multicenter Study. So the goal is to study childhood diarrheal diseases in developing countries. So similar to how genomics is used to study the genomes of everybody, metagenomics studies microbiomes. So the main question is examining the differences in microbial communities between healthy and diseased individuals. So this figure is from a recent study, or this figure is from a recent paper from the childhood diarrheal disease study. It gives an overview of some of the main points of metagenomics. So one on the left is going to be the different bacteria that are seen at the genus level. And then on the right, you can see case and control. So patients that exhibited childhood diarrheal disease and those that didn't. This data set also cared about the time sequence and the country of origin. So the objectives for the talk today are to, one, introduce key metrics and statistical tests in metagenomic analysis. Two is to characterize re-identification concerns if we're going to be posting metagenomics data, and is this a risk to patients or not. Three is to study the applicability of proposed privacy-preserving schemes for the analysis of genomics data and see if they can be applied to metagenomics data. And then fourth is to outline the specific requirements of generating privacy-preserving systems operating on genomics data. So the four key metrics in metagenomics are what I'm going to go over next. They're all going to be computed on a table similar to this. So you're going to have samples from patients. You're going to split those up into case and control groups, and then you're going to choose a specific OTU to study across those case and control groups. So the first metric is going to be just presence or abundance of an OTU. And this is just going to be, was the OTU count above a certain level at that element in the table. The statistical test that we're going to care about, if an OTU present versus absent associates with case and control group membership, is going to be the chi-square test. The chi-square table is going to be generated as follows, where you have how many times an OTU was seen in the case population and the control population, and then likewise for if it was absent. And the chi-square statistic will be generated as follows. The next metric is the abundance or quantity of OTU. And does that correlate with, or does that significantly differ between case and control groups? So the mean abundance for an OTU is going to be generated as follows. And so that's going to be done for both the case and control groups. And then the variance for that OTU is going to be calculated as well. The next two metrics in metagenomic analysis are going to be alpha diversity. So how much, given one sample, do the are the OTUs represented? How even are they? So the actual distribution of OTUs, and then how rich is the sample? And so that means how many total OTUs that are already known are present in that sample. So there's two key indices that are calculated for to describe alpha diversity, and they are the Shannon's index, which is calculated using the fraction of a single OTU compared to the total number of OTUs in that sample, and then the Simpson's index. So again, similarly abundance, the two-sample T statistic is going to be calculated to examine the difference, the significance of the difference between case and control groups. The final metric of metagenomic analysis I'm going to talk about today is the beta diversity. So beta diversity just looks at, given two samples, how similar are they based on their OTU makeup? The Bray-Curtis dissimilarity index is one of the main measures of beta diversity. And again, the two-sample t-test will be used to test the difference between case and control groups. So now that I've gone over the metagenomics analysis, I'm gonna ask the question, is releasing patients' microbiome for public study, is that going to present a similar hazard as releasing patients' whole human genome sequences? So the concerns with whole human genome sequences is that the genome itself can act as a unique identifier of an individual, and re-identification is possible given a publicly posted data set. And the earlier presenter today talked about the two studies that have, the three studies that have analyzed that. But the understanding of the genome being a unique identifier is based on three metrics. So first, a well-estimated rate of genome variation between individuals, a defined number of sites where each individual can vary. So it's gonna be a 3.2 billion characters of the human genome. And then specifically there's known regions where you're more likely to see a specific variant. And then the third important factor is that given any single variant that we know about in the population, how likely is it that an individual is gonna carry one of a number of copies of that variant. So for the picture with microbiome data, just given the point of the research stage, these three metrics aren't clear. So a good understanding of are these microbiome sequences unique identifiers can't easily be calculated yet. And it's mainly due to the fidelity of transfer of microbiome from parent to offspring. And that mechanism isn't quite understood yet. But there have been projects that have looked specifically at forensic analysis based on microbiome data. For instance, Ferrer matched the microbial community on a keyboard to a person's fingertip. So what I aimed to do was to examine the re-identification empirically. So look at a given data set that's already been posted, and the first question I'm going to ask is, does this OTU abundance and also, if I transfer it to presence-absence matrix, does it uniquely separate individuals in a data set? So this will form the underpinning of can I find a microbial fingerprint to uniquely identify people? And then that would say, we shouldn't be posting these data sets publicly because I can identify somebody's fingerprint. So that would form the underpinning for that. So the data set that I looked at was from the Personal Genome Project. So they released microbiome sequencing results. This data set had 87 individuals sampled at the forehead, right palm, left palm, mouth, and gut. And so another project, actually the American Gut Project, analyzed the data set and performed OTU clustering and classification and came to the conclusion that there were 12,000 or so OTUs that were present in across the samples in the data set. So my work, I saw that for the OTU abundance matrix, so how many counts for each OTU, there were no identical samples across all body sites of all individuals. So that was each column vector was unique, and then also changing those raw counts to presence absence, there were no identical samples again. So these represent the maximal OTU fingerprint to separate samples in this data set. So there's a number of pieces of ongoing work that I'm going to be performing, which is first looking at this maximal OTU fingerprint, seeing if this maximal OTU fingerprint exists on other data sets. And then two is going to be computing beta diversity to check that all samples for one individual are more similar to that individual than for any other individual. And then finally, I have a goal of finding a minimal OTU fingerprint to separate samples in this data set. So next I'm going to talk about existing privacy-preserving schemes that operate on genomics data. So the first one is looking at across multiple samples, can we perform a privacy-preserving genome-wide association study? So last year, Com et al. Proposed a secret sharing scheme to use between biobanks to perform some chosen statistical tests without releasing patients' genome sequences. So a brief overview of secret sharing is that two parties, A and B, can take a value that they do not want to publicly share and compute a specified function over that data. So this is going to be used. This is going to be based on generating shares of that secret value that they care about, and then sending those shares to data hosts, which will then compute the function. So Com et al. Showed that given an implemented secret sharing scheme that they had done, they could perform a chi-square test and use that to test the association between an exposure to a specific SNP and the casein control group membership for individuals. So this test, the chi-square test, can be performed on a secret shared database of genome data from the two institutions. So a view of the contingency table is here. So you're going to split up into casein control memberships. And for the single nucleotide polymorphism test, you're going to, the authors proposed that instead of storing the SNPs similar to the earlier presenter did, you're actually just going to store counts for how many times the variant was seen, how many copies of the variant that an individual had versus the normal expected nucleotide at that position. And then this is the secret shared database. So the variant versus wild type allele will be coded as counts of how many times that copy, how many times those copies were seen. So the index vectors containing the casein control group membership can be generated on the secret shared data or generated beforehand. And then the contingency table counts can be performed on the secret shared data as follows. And then finally, the author showed that the chi-square statistic can then be computed on this secret shared data. And then their scheme was implemented in a additive 32-bit integer secret sharing scheme. So floating point arithmetic wasn't natively supported. So they ended up, to compare against the test statistics against the p-value, they ended up performing some arithmetic to perform integer comparison. So what I've done is say that I believe that the chi-square test can be used to test the association between the specific OTU and casing control group membership using the scheme that was outlined by Com et al. So the contingency cable, instead of allele counts, will just be the present absence. The secret shared database will contain one table, which is just how many was that OTU present or absent. The same scheme for sharing the index vectors will give me casing control groups, and then the contingency table counts can be generated as follows, and the chi-square statistic could then be calculated and tested against the p-value. So the other, one of the other metrics that we cared about in metagenomic analysis was the abundance. I've been looking to see if abundance can be calculated, or the abundance test can be computed, and it appears that if the microbiome data can be set up similar to how it was in the other scheme, and then I can still secret share the index vectors to give me casing control groups, I can compute the mean abundance and variance for both the casing control groups on this data. And then I would have a two-sample t statistic to test the differences between the casing control groups for this mean abundance. One issue that arises is that this involves quite a bit more floating point arithmetic and division. And so I might either, the authors talked about how slow that is for their scheme, so either I'll just need to verify the speed of it and if it's acceptable or not, or then or use a different multi-party computation scheme. So one concern with this metagenomics analysis data, and specifically using for secret sharing across across biobanks, is that metagenomics data or metagenomic statistical testing needs to be possible at any arbitrary level of the taxonomic tree. So this tree was a rough representation of the tree of life. Tree of life is not necessarily binary or symmetric, but the goal was to show that this cut is any arbitrary cut through the tree. So again, those OTUs were classified against a taxonomy. So the taxonomy can change. That just goes on with common at the end of major sequencing projects. And then also, I would like to ask either at the species level, the genus level, or higher up in the hierarchy, how do the OTU abundance or any of the other metagenomics statistics vary between casing control groups. So finally, the last scheme I'll talk about was for secure storage and computation of disease risk. So this was done by IDEA at last year's Health Tech. So they proposed using properties of an additive homomorphic encryption scheme to compute the disease risk of an individual without fully decrypting the genome to any party. So the basics of the scheme was that a patient would share their DNA sample to a certified institution, so a sequencing center, that would then sequence the individual's genome and then send the encrypted data to a storage and processing unit. And then also the patient would interact with a medical unit, so for instance, a physician's office, who would then ask how likely is it that this individual, given their set of SNPs, is going to develop a disease or not. And so they proposed several properties to allow the SNP vector to stay encrypted, and then use homomorphic addition and secure integer comparison to allow for the computation of the disease risk based on the odds ratios for each of the SNPs associated with that disease, and then devise the person's disease risk. And so it appears that with expanding to microbiome sequencing, I believe that the SNP vector encryption scheme and the homomorphic addition of odds ratios can be translated to OTU presence and absence metric. So ongoing work on my part is to understand how to perform the disease risk computation with the abundance and diversity metrics. And then also one issue is that with long-term storage of microbiome data is that I'll need to re-update the OTU classifications anytime a major sequencing project finishes. And those sequences, for instance, that sequence of E. coli changes to a different strain or species. So in conclusion, microbiome sequencing data and metagenomic analysis techniques present unique challenges compared to genome data. So I looked at re-identification concerns. I overviewed a secret sharing scheme to allow for population-wide analysis of if microbiome data is associated with disease. And then also, I looked at the feasibility of secure storage and computation disease risk. I'd like to thank my advisor, Hector Corrado Bravo, for its help with this. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Justin. Okay, we have a little bit of time for, is that a question? Yeah, come up, stand up at the mic and name and affiliation, right. Please.
Murat Kantarcıoğlu, University of Texas at Dallas. My question is, in the SNP or the GWAS type of studies, there is also this, the SNPs disclose some information about potential diseases, et cetera. So is there any such concerns of information disclosure here other than re-identification?
So that's another avenue that I'm going to try to be looking at, which is, for instance, just even seeing a specific microbiome signature is going to say that he currently has this disease. There are some diseases that are just caused by a bacteria being present. So that's going to be a concern that, yes, similar to how SNPs give you disease likelihood, just presence of an OTU will likely also give away information about individual susceptibility to a disease.
All right. Any other questions? All right. Okay. Well, let's thank Justin again. Thank you.
Thank you very much.